Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
It's draft day, everybody. Congratulations to all those who celebrate. You made it. Glad to be here with you, Jacob Albrecht, Tommy Kester, alongside you for this Thursday edition, taking you up to round one of the NFL draft. We are we're pretty pumped up for it, all the way across the board. There's all kinds of good things to keep an eye out for. The Chiefs have a lot of things they could accomplish, a lot of options for them as well. It's going to be wild. It's going to be crazy, and we'll take a final look at it here today. The Royals playing some day baseball, trying to win the series against the Blue Jays. Another win last night. Certainly something we like seeing from Kansas City. Good pitching performance last night as well. Alec Marsh did have to leave the game, though, so we'll keep an eye on that. That fifth starter for the Royals has been their best starter this many times now through the rotation. Did he get the win last night? He did not get the win last night to move to what would have been 4-5-0, but we'll keep an eye on his injury status as well. We may get some info on that today. All kinds of good stuff taking you through here. Tommy, I have a hard time here today not talking about anything but the NFL draft, but there are a lot of other things happening. We learned K-State is headed off to Ireland for Farmageddon in 2025, which is pretty exciting. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Dylan Edwards, who is being reported to be interested in both K-State and KU as potential landing spots. So we'll get into all of that with Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider. He moves up from his normal time slot. That'll actually come in our next segment. So K-State fans, stay tuned for that. GoPowerCat.com publisher Tim Fitzgerald will join us. Lots to do, lots to have fun with you about. That IHOP hotline is open at 869-1240. Jad Chambers is on that for us. You can also leave us your comments on our video stream, which is available to you on Facebook and YouTube and X. You can listen to us live as well, of course, at kfhradio.com. If you're in your car and you've got to go inside to work or whatever it is, you can pull it up on your phone right there in the browser. It's super easy, or, of course, on the Odyssey app. We will give away some HTO today, so stay tuned for your chance to win some free tea and coffee. Tommy, how are you?
Busy day. Busy, busy day. Just in general, and of course, getting ready for the NFL draft and all that comes with it. I know that, I know it's been talked about every year. I mean, leading up to the draft, everybody always discusses it, but I feel like maybe this year more than in the last several years, there's so much intrigue surrounding the first several picks and maybe the first round in general. And I think a lot of it has to do with a deep quarterback class and all of that. So it's been so much fun to get ready for, and we're knocking on the door of the first overall pick in just a few hours.
It will be wild and crazy, which is what we want out of draft day. The Caleb Williams thing makes it just a little bit less exciting because we know who's going one overall, but we almost always do. Man, after that, though, Tommy, I have no idea. You've had, Jaden Daniels, you heard in the update right before we came on, people are saying he doesn't want to go to Washington. He's saying that's not true. Here we go with all that business. I doubt that that's true. I mean, maybe privately he's had a preference on where he goes. I think everybody, if they're being honest, has a preference where they go. They'd all like to go to the Vikings, right? Like, oh, man, I'd love to end up in Minnesota, because you would. Everybody would. Well, that'd be great. And if you're any of these quarterbacks outside of Caleb Williams, it's like, boy, what would be a best-case scenario for me? That somehow I end up with the Minnesota Vikings. He wanted to go there. Kevin O'Connell's a quarterback guy. Why wouldn't you want to go there? right? And we didn't talk about it yet, Tommy, but you've got the Justin Herbert, you know, trade rumors floating around. And, you know, we kind of laughed that off as Antonio Brown talking about it. And then all of a sudden, ESPN Bet puts those odds from 100 to 1 to 6 to 1. And it's like, well, hang on a minute. Like, what's going on? Now, I will caution you that those odds on things like that fly around wildly based on reporting and everything else. We see this all the time. So don't put too much stock into that, but it at least piques our interest. And we talked through yesterday just how unlikely that would be for about 1,000 different reasons, financially and because you don't trade away guys like Justin Herbert. But I think it's worth paying attention to because Jim Harbaugh's obvious connections to J.J. McCarthy, right? So we have all of that kind of stuff. Now, T. Higgins is requesting a trade. The Cincinnati Bengals receiver that Chiefs fans have salivated at the thought of bringing in for a long time. I don't think that's really possible, but we can get into that a little bit here in just a second. But you've got star power potentially being traded at multiple different positions. You have a quarterback-rich class in which, you know, five of these guys grayed out by different people to be NFL starting quarterbacks, you know, for whatever that means. Like, these guys are going to be names we see stick around for a long time. That's a pretty good class. You've got a wide receiver class that's as good as any we've seen on the top end. And you've got the potential for some really good players at other positions to slip. You've got, you know, trades in the first round have never been more popular than they are right now, most notably trading down. So it's all out there. Remember last year, the Texans, not only did they take C.J. Stroud, but remember they traded up and basically picked twice in a row and then ended up with Will Anderson. So there's precedent for all of this stuff to happen again tonight, and I think a lot of it will. I think this is, again, I think we're going to see trades galore. I think there's a decent chance we see some star power traded. What would you give up for T. Higgins? Probably less than what people think would be given up for T. Higgins. But something significant. So it's all out there, Tommy, and it will make for an interesting round one. The only thing that would disappoint us tonight is if it's kind of, you know, cookie cutter, which there's almost no chance it will
be. Yeah, I don't think it will be because there are so many different directions that a variety of teams can go and have these decisions to make that you could make arguments for either side. I mean, we talked about the Chiefs, obviously, leading up to this draft. There are arguments that can be made that they would be better off trading up, trading down, staying put. Like, there's not a consensus one way or another.
I totally agree.
With multiple teams. I mean, and pretty much outside of the number one pick, that's kind of the consensus. You know, that we know the Bears are going to take Caleb Williams in the end. But from there, it's pretty much up in the air. I do want to address very briefly the Justin Herbert rumors. It's not going to happen. But if it does, on the off chance that it does, the Chargers are a more stupid organization than I thought they were if they make that move. Even from just basically a financial point of view, they just signed Justin Herbert to a deal last year, a five-year, $262 million deal. If they trade him, they're going to take a huge cap hit, and they're going to absorb a huge amount of dead money. So I don't know why they would do that with the talent that Justin Herbert possesses just to be able to draft J.J. McCarthy, who's unproven. So from a financial point of view, it's idiotic. And then even just from the quarterback, like, you know, talent perspective.
Yeah, you just don't trade him.
You don't trade Justin Herbert. So if they do that, you know, that would tell me that they've given Jim Harbaugh full control over that organization and the personnel and what he wants to do. And he, you know, starts off his era in L.A., in a really, really bad way. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think they're going to trade Justin Herbert to try to draft J.J.
McCarthy. I don't think it's going
to
happen either, Tommy. But let's just look at a couple of things that at least need to make us, like, kind of, you know, perk the ear up just a little bit. Obvious connections between Harbaugh and McCarthy, right? That one's very clear. The financial ramifications are probably very short-term, but in the long-term, you're still with a rookie contract. Like, you have to eat that early. But they are in a little bit of a rebuilding year. They've lost a lot of players in this offseason. Now, can they quickly come around? Maybe. The other thing that I think is really interesting to remember about Harbaugh, it was Harbaugh, right, that was willing to get aggressive and take Kaepernick when they still had Alex Smith, correct?
Correct.
They don't necessarily have to trade Herbert now to draft McCarthy for one, which would be a really fascinating dynamic. Two, Harbaugh has a history of this, right?
But so why create an unnecessary quarterback controversy?
Because I think the only reason he would do that is because, and he is, and I think he deserves some credit, right? In the short term, Colin Kaepernick, that decision took them to the Super Bowl. Now, he didn't ultimately continue the level of success that he had early on. I'm not trying to make this a Colin Kaepernick debate. I'm talking strictly about football. You know, he kind of leveled off there quickly, but in the beginning, he took them to a Super Bowl. So Harbaugh has a history of this. He's a guy that is a little unique. Like, he coached this player specifically for a long time.
He's an odd
Well, no, I don't mean personality. I mean his resume. You have to remember, like, he's had success at both levels. So if there is somebody, right, played the position, who, you know, all of these things, has been good at it at both levels, if there is anybody that could come in and say, guys, you got to trust me, I know how to evaluate quarterbacks, J.J. McCarthy is the real deal. He has called him the best prospect he's ever seen, best pro day he's ever seen, best quarterback Michigan's ever had. Like, all these things he's made proclamations of. Now, is that just window dressing to, you know, to prop up his guy, or does he really believe that? Let's just say he really believes that. Let's just, for a second, consider that Jim Harbaugh, who now is in the, you know, in the seat there, honestly and genuinely believes that J.J. McCarthy is the best quarterback prospect he's ever seen. If he believes that, then, and they have given him the ability to do these things, then I think that that would create this scenario where you could say, you know what? They might just do that. Because if he's right about that, then great, right? You do it. He's got to be right about it, but he has some history of being right about that stuff. So it's really, again, I don't think it's going to happen either, because I think Justin Herbert is incredible. I think that, you know, he has had some of the worst coaching we've seen in the NFL over the start to his career. I think that, you know, he has played injured a lot. And I think that we forget how unreal the start to his career was compared to the history of this league. And it's going to be a step back for him this year, because probably will be, because he's not going to have his two best weapons. I think he's a top five quarterback right now. I would not trade him. No chance. Because you just, there's no way. When we talk about, is this quarterback a potential Hall of Famer? I think he's a potential Hall of Famer. So if that's the criteria, and I think it is, to win a Super Bowl, I don't think you trade that away. But I don't think it's worth just totally dismissing because of the circumstances around their new head coach and what he has said publicly about one of these quarterbacks.
Look, I have been even, I think, less optimistic on Justin Herbert as far as ranking him than you have been.
Like, I'm higher.
I don't put him in my top five. I think he's a really good quarterback. I think he just still has a lot to prove in the NFL. But I will say, this is not the same situation that the Chicago Bears had. This, you know, Justin Herbert is not Justin Fields, you know, and so in talking about the, you know, if you've scouted J.J. McCarthy as the best quarterback prospect, then, you know, you should entertain that. The Bears did the same thing. They scouted Caleb Williams as the best thing for the future of their franchise, and they moved away from Justin Fields. But Justin Herbert is objectively and significantly better than Justin Fields is. So that's a move that I think the Chargers and Jim Harbaugh would be absolutely crazy to make that move. Because even if you think J.J. McCarthy is incredible, I just think that you're bringing in a situation of a potential quarterback controversy that's not needed. Now, if Justin Herbert was 30 years old, 32 years old, something like that, okay, bring in a rookie, you know, that's the heir apparent. We've seen teams do that, where they do it all the time. You know, even with the star quarterbacks they have on their roster, they'll bring somebody in, you know, and let them learn on the bench. But Justin Herbert's 26. Justin Herbert has a long ways to go in the NFL. And Justin Herbert is already a really good, if not great, quarterback with the potential to be an elite quarterback in the National Football League. I don't know why you move away from that. Even if you have scouted J.J. McCarthy as incredible, I think that would be a monumental mistake for the Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, it would appear to be a mistake. I totally agree. And the difference between Justin Herbert and Justin Fields is significant, right? Fields was still like an upside play. Herbert is very much a proven commodity. Now, he needs to win at a higher clip and do all those things, but just as far as play on the field, far more of a proven commodity. I just remember Alex Smith. When Alex Smith lost his job to Colin Kaepernick, and I'm trying to remember this, you know, off the top of my head. Alex Smith, I do have these numbers. Before Alex, the last two seasons there in 2011 and 2012, Alex Smith was 19-5-1.
Yeah.
And was playing really good football. Now, the league was different then, right? You know, so don't try to compare that to like the numbers that Herbert's put up. They were winning a ton of games with him. I believe he was knocked out of a game because of injury. Concussion, I think. Kaepernick got in. Kaepernick never lost the job. Alex Smith was traded. I don't think Harbaugh is afraid to go with his guy. And again, if McCarthy is his guy in that way, if Justin Herbert didn't have the contract that he has, this would be, I guess, slightly more justifiable. At the core of it, for me, I don't think J.J. McCarthy is going to be better than Justin Herbert. That's why I wouldn't do the deal. Right, I wouldn't do it because I think Justin Herbert's better quarterback. But let's say the contract wasn't signed last year, Tommy, and it was, you know, Justin Herbert about to be on an expiring contract. I think it wouldn't be that crazy at all to think about them trading him. So it's really that financial component that seems like the thing that would make this not possible. The other thing is too, on the pro, this is all crazy. Why would they ever do that side? Harbaugh took that job, right? I assume that job was the most attractive for him to take because of Justin Herbert. I mean, maybe at the time he's looking at these, he's thinking about, well, if I go here, I'll pick five, I'll have a chance at McCarthy, I doubt it, right? Like, I don't know that you can be that forward thinking. These guys haven't even been through pro day at that point. So It seems unlikely. I think he's in L.A. to coach the Chargers because of Justin Herbert, and I think this is probably a lot of smoke, but it's smoke that's really interesting, and we'll just watch it. I mean, we'll watch it. We'll see. And could you imagine Justin Herbert in Minnesota? Oh, holy smokes.
Well, and at that point, then you've got Justin Jefferson. I'm him. I'm sticking around in Minnesota. I'm not going to try to figure out a deal to get out of there.
That'd be crazy.
I mean, that would be a match made in
Kevin
heaven.
O'Connell? Yeah. Come on. Yeah, no. I just
it's not happening.
I can't wait.
Not happening.
I cannot wait for tonight. I cannot wait for tonight. I don't think it's happening either. Here's what I think. I think McCarthy's not going to be the fourth quarterback. I'm starting to think that he may be taken before May or Daniels. That's what I'm kind of starting to get the vibe of. Like, he's going to be the guy that's drafted a little higher that when all of this started, we thought he would be. I mean, that's the other thing, too, if you're the Chargers. Like, what if Washington all this is like, you know what, we're taking J.J. McCarthy. Then all this Herbert stuff's meaningless anyway. L.A.'s not in the position to just have him. We'll see. He has had the most momentum, would you agree, of any player in this draft, the guy that has created the most momentum to move up. When the season ended, we weren't talking about J.J. McCarthy as a top five pick. We were like, I wonder if this guy would be any good in the pros. And something has happened, and I would imagine it's in large credit to him and in the offseason work he's done and as teams have gotten a closer look at him, I think. So that's what makes that interesting to me, too, is I just kind of feel like one of these. Who would you rather have, Tommy? Drake May or J.J. McCarthy?
Probably J.J. McCarthy at this point.
I think I would, too. I just don't know enough about Drake May. And that's the disadvantage for us. J.J. McCarthy, every game he played for the last 2 years was high profile, right? Because they were all like games that could potentially cost them their championship. Drake May wasn't in any significant games, really. Rick says McCarthy will be a bust. I don't think he'll be a bust. I don't know if he'll be like a top 10 quarterback, but I don't think he'll be a bust. I think there's a better chance Drake May's a bust. If we're talking about bust caliber and bust candidates, you know, it would be of those four, it would be May is the more likely to bust to me. In fact, I'd say Jaden Daniels is more likely to be a total bust than J.J. McCarthy. I think J.J. McCarthy's floor is what? Jimmy Garoppolo? You know what I mean? Like, just somebody who takes care of the ball and can distribute it to good weapons if he has them. That's a compliment. You know, that's not a bad thing. I don't know. I think he'll move up. I guess I would, if I had to take him, I'd start with Caleb Williams. You know that. Who'd you rather have? And I think I know the answer to this. Jaden Daniels or J.J. McCarthy?
Jaden Daniels. I love Jaden Daniels. I love his ceiling.
That's what I thought. I think it depends on the fit. I think it depends on the landing spot. If it was, let's say, Minnesota, I'd rather have J.J. McCarthy. I need more of a distributor. But if I'm Washington, I probably would rather have Jaden Daniels. If I'm New England, I would certainly rather have Jaden Daniels. So I guess it sort of depends on the fit. I love it. I love that there's quarterbacks in here. Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze. I'm also curious to see if teams may get aggressive to take one of those guys. When T. Higgins requests a trade and we see Amon-Ra St. Brown yesterday get just a massive contract, what is the value of receivers? Obviously they're valuable in today's NFL, but I mean like the value to the cap. How much should teams be investing in receivers like that? I know everyone got excited about the Amon-Ra St. Brown deal, but are you better off, you know, utilizing these guys for a couple of years and then going back to the draft because there's so many good receivers now coming up? That's the Chiefs' plan of attack to some degree. Right? I think they've told us they're not going to pay a big ticket receiver. Historically speaking, paying big ticket receivers does not work well. Cooper Kupp, you might say, with the Rams in a recent Super Bowl, but he won that Super Bowl before he got paid. So I don't know. I saw the Amon-Ra thing, and it makes me think then, like, do you get more aggressive to trade like for Marvin Harrison Jr. and these high end rookies to get them while they're less expensive?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it depends on who the receiver is. I mean, somebody like Marvin Harrison Jr. or Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers probably isn't going to need as much time to develop into a pro-ready wide receiver. Like, you can probably just plug and play to an extent. I think the further down you go, look at Rashee Rice. You know, last year it took him maybe half the season to get up to speed to really be able to work his way into the rotation to be effective with the Chiefs. So I think if you're a very, very, very top-level wide receiver, then yeah, you can draft him, you can play him on a rookie deal, you know they're going to be effective pretty much right away. Then you don't necessarily have to shell out the money, you know, to pay them. You can just go back to the draft and do it again.
Okay, you letting Justin Jefferson walk soon if you're Minnesota?
That's a tough one. It's going to depend on who their quarterback is in Minnesota, I think. You know, who's going to be throwing Jefferson the ball?
And the Bengals, right? It's not. I doubt they let Ja'Marr Chase walk. You just for sure can't do two of them, right? You can't do Chase and Higgins. Higgins is really good. We'll talk about his prospects as far as the Chiefs go as a pipe dream for Chiefs fans as we make our way through. Let's take a break. There's a lot going on in Manhattan. We'll talk about K-State's announcement to go play in Ireland, the Dylan Edwards recruitment, and anything else with Tim Fitzgerald. Our K-State insider joins us next on Sports Daily.
Sports Talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
He's got all the insight of what you want to know and maybe some of what you don't want to know. Here's K-State insider Tim Fitzgerald.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily on KFH. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, joined by Tim Fitzgerald of GoPowerCat.com, at Life of Fitz on social media. Fitz, how are you this morning?
I am wonderful. Thanks for having me early so I can go to the dentist.
That's fun. Are you expecting cavities or work or like?
No. This is just my 6-month cleaning so I can be all shiny and new.
Well, we just put your smiling grill up on the video stream. So you got to keep that intact. You got to got to take care of that. Fitz, I want to start with Dylan Edwards. We'll get to the Ireland thing in a minute. Yesterday, I don't ever like to tell people what to think or how to feel or anything like that. But I feel like for K-State fans that might be like, no, you rejected us, you stabbed us in the back, all these things. I don't want to tell anybody how to feel, but my advice would be let it go and welcome this kid back with open arms if they can get him back, because he would be a really nice fit in this offense right away.
Absolutely. I mean, look, if you're in sales and someone tells you no repeatedly and then goes with another customer or another, company, you don't burn that bridge. You leave it open so that you can go back to them, particularly if they're unhappy, and get them to switch. Look, K-State did a good job with this. They never closed the door to Dylan Edwards. They were very kind about his switch. There was some tension around it, but the door was always open for a return. And that's the right way to play it with Kansas kids, because we've all had that where, I'm going out on my own. Maybe I should do my own thing. And then you realize, home's not that bad. And I think that's where we're at with this. I think he needs to trust the ground underneath his feet and know the people around him a little bit. He's had an interesting experience from what I'm told in Boulder.
He's definitely a guy, Fitz, that, I feel like we all know how talented he is, and we've known that for a long time. But he's definitely a kind of a plug-and-play running back, I think, for whatever program he ends up with. How do you think that, if he ends up in Manhattan and actually plays for the Wildcats next season, what's the best way, do you think, for the Kansas State offense to utilize him?
Well, they are looking for a second running back. They came out of spring and realized, hey, we got some good young backs, but we're not sure we're there yet with them being, the backup and at minimum like 10 carries a game. So they decided to go find someone with a little more experience, and Dylan pops up, and he changes the equation a little bit. He might demand more than, 10 snaps, 20 snaps, whatever that is a game. Might be able to rest DJ Giddens a little bit more than originally predicted. But also you can use Dylan in the slot as a receiver, and he gives you an immediate kickoff, a punt returner. There's a lot of things you can do with Dylan. And because you would have Dylan with Avery and DJ, it might create some other formations that you weren't even looking at so that you can get more players involved and really mess with the defense and who's trying to figure out who's going to carry the ball amongst that group.
There's value in keeping your star quarterback happy, too, I think. In an era where players can be lured away, having those two together is probably never a bad thing. It's just interesting. What's also interesting is, there could be potential rival schools in the mix for him as well, and that would be the ultimate acid in the wound, as if Dylan Edwards ended up at KU, because you know what? He'd really help them, too.
Right.
That's what will be interesting to see as this plays out. This could be a great day or a terrible day for K-State fans when he makes his decision.
As I sit here right now, and of course I don't have any morning updates on what's progressing, I'll be surprised if it's not at K-State. But with the NIL, you just don't know what's going to transpire. And I'm told that's not really the motivator here. Trying to get back to where he feels like he belongs is more of the motivator. This is Dylan driven, not the family. And I don't know, maybe people in Wichita are more conscious of this, but Dylan and Avery are tight. The families are tight. There's a sense of it is coming home, even though he never played at K-State. So his father did. That hasn't been a real factor in any of this decision-making. So it's going to be intriguing to see how this plays out, because I think Texas A&M's jumped into it now, and that will be NIL. That will be a lot of money. They're throwing money around, and I guess they didn't learn from the last time that doesn't exactly build a cohesive locker room to have everyone arguing about how much they're getting paid and playing. It might be amount of money that the Edwards can't turn down. Again, Dylan, from what I'm told, has not been particularly happy in Boulder. It's a strange experience playing for Dion. And I've heard multiple transfers out there say, I got to get to a real football program that's run like a college program. I think Dylan probably feels the same way, to feel more connected to the campus and his teammates.
I want to segue here, and this is off topic of the Dylan Edwards situation, and I know we're going to talk about the Ireland game and all of that here in a little bit, but as we're talking about, and I just kind of thought of this because you mentioned how, you know, obviously both Kansas State and Kansas are interested in Dylan Edwards, and he's got some, at least a level of interest in both programs. I know that, and I've been following the social media over the last week or so. Do you guys still have an interview with Travis Goff at KU? And I want to know kind of what that looks like, and, you know, how that whole thing has sort of come about as it relates to the stadium project at the University of Kansas.
Yeah, that's this afternoon.
Okay.
Zach Carlson, my photographer, videographer, and I will head over. We're expecting to have a, you know, sit-down interview. It won't be long. I don't have that many questions. I think people have seen me talking about the stadium and thought I'm against it or against the Gateway. No, I like both projects. I just don't understand the connection between the two. I think they're two different projects. And I had some people up in arms because I said the Gateway project is on hold. Well, it isn't if you look at the stadium as being part of it. But, you know, the Gateway isn't being built. I mean, I think that's an indication that the Gateway portion of this is most on hold, although the Conference Center is part of this phase. But I think all the focus will certainly be on getting that stadium ready for 2025. But no, the KU administration, Daniel Burke, called me, got it set up. They've been wonderful. And I don't expect this to be confrontational at all. I just got a few questions about funding and understanding, and could have been done by an email. But they want us to come over to Lawrence, sit down, and we're more than happy to. I enjoy going to Lawrence.
Always stirring the pot, Fitz. That's why we love you.
I know. And I don't really mean to that much. I think people have overreacted to what I'm demanding here, you know, what I want. I just want some answers on funding. And a lot of fans have told me what's going on, often conflicting with their source being, trust me, bro. And, you know, I just want to get a little firmer answer, understanding the financing and how, you know, it might impact other schools in the state with state-directed taxpayer funding. They're not using general funds from the state of Kansas. It has come out of a grant matching program. And, you know, every school applied. Every other school is doing straight-up academic concerns. And this has a stadium in it. And I'm just personally of the belief that you shouldn't, in this economic environment in which we're in right now, over the last 10 years, or maybe into the future, use any kind of taxpayer funds for college athletic facilities. That's just my belief. I think we've got enough things going on in the state, and certainly the funding of our higher education has lacked a little bit here in the state of Kansas. We've got a lot of maintenance that's backed up, and I noticed KU's budget shortfall in 2022 was, you know, rather dramatic. I'm just not comfortable with any kind of taxpayer money going to athletic facilities. In this age of these kind of revenues for athletic departments, I think it probably should be mostly paid out of them. But you know what? Also, KU, that's one of the biggest points of pride in that stadium is the graduation aspect, and I respect that. I just think there might have been other ways to go about this. I just want to talk to Travis a little bit about it because I really like projects. I'm into this. I mean, I really follow the Royals Chiefs stuff. I don't know why. I can't build anything, but I just find these kind of construction projects and how they come about and how they get executed in this short time is absolutely fascinating.
Well, it's easier when you don't have to pay for it.
I'm not
talking about the KU situation because I'm not educated enough. I'm talking about the pro situation. Like, I think people are fed up with paying for billionaire projects. Let the billionaires pay for their own projects.
Yeah, I think
that's at the core of it. The college thing has more wrinkles than I'm educated up to. We'll leave that to you. But you know, it's an interesting dynamic all across the board. I get it. It's uncomfortable. Right. We can't afford to send our kids to college right now. Let's fix that. There are a lot of issues there. But at the same time, you got to keep up with the Joneses. Right. Like if you're going to stay competitive, which is important, It's an interesting debate. I'll be curious to see that discussion. I think it will be good and healthy and fine.
It might be a wonderful 5-minute video or 2-minute video. I don't know. I don't know where this is going to go. And I appreciate Athletic Director Goff for setting aside some time for me. I'm more than glad to ask questions. That's what I do.
We got some pretty good athletic directors in the state of Kansas right now that are available and are open to conversations and all across the board at all three of the big universities. Yeah. And I do appreciate that. Fitz, Ireland. Are you going to go?
That would be the plan. There's some other outliers there that might prevent it depending on my health. But yeah, that's the plan. It's, about, as I look at airfares for the equivalent dates in August this year, they're naturally next year's August isn't on sale yet. About $1,300, $1,250 a person out of Kansas City.
Round trip
there. That's it sounds bad as I thought. But it's open posted. That sounds good. Family of four, that's $5,000. And I'm like, yeah, that's not as good. We won't be taking the dogs, so that cuts down on so our kids aren't going. But yeah, it's a big bite for my company, I'll be honest. Just to send two of us over for $5,000 is, for $2,500, it's a lot, plus hotel.
Don't you think, though, Farmageddon, I don't know how big the stadium they play in over there is, but they're going to sell that out. I was so excited to see that game over there. A, they'll sell it out. Give Ireland a little taste of a great college rivalry. Like, I'm in. I think this is a really cool idea. And I know that, you maybe sort of lose getting to have that game somewhere on one of those home campuses. But if we're taking what the best of college football is across the pond, that's good stuff. And for K-State, what's it been since the early 90s at Nebraska since they've played an overseas game? Like, it's been a long time. This will be really cool, and I think they'll sell it out.
Yeah, I agree. I think Iowa State and Kansas State fans will overrun Dublin and probably damage diplomatic relations between the two nations after the beer drought of 2025 hits, because these two fan bases drank all the beer in Ireland, and it'll be a shock to their economy. That's my predictions. Maybe I'm out on the limb with that one.
I don't mean to rain on the parade here, and I'm probably going to sound like, old man yelling at clouds. I hate this. I hate this plan. And if it was any other game except for Farmageddon, I'd be more okay with it. But I just feel bad that, like, I know it's only 1 year, but that it's being moved away from here. I mean, from local, for whether, is it Ames or is it Manhattan next year? It'd be Manhattan, right?
It's Ames.
Okay. So I feel bad for the Ames.
Sorry. This game, the Ireland game, is Manhattan.
Okay.
And then 26 is Ames. And 27, they're off.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And so,
it's all. Yeah,
there's not a ton more games, not a lot of years left remaining, on this, Farmageddon, at least the way it's scheduled now. And I just feel bad that it's going away from home, when I first saw that K-State was playing in Ireland, I'm like, okay, I can get behind that. That's pretty cool. Then I saw it was the Iowa State game, and I'm like, wow, I wish it was a different one. Anything other than Iowa State or the Sunflower Showdown, any other opponent I would have been good with. I'm sure that, overall, from just the, visibility perspective and the fact that, you get to play overseas and all of that stuff is good. But just from, the fan perspective, I don't love it. Yeah. I don't love it's that matchup.
No, but it impacts local business in a negative way. A lot of fans won't be able to afford to go. They lose going to home game. They love coming and tailgating. It's just a whole family experience in the K-State culture. So there's some pushback, but there's a significant financial component for the athletic department, which in this era is going to be part of it. And also, all fans of all Big 12 institutions, better get used to their fans or their programs jumping through, some obstacles here to get on national TV, to be not just on national TV, but in a major time slot, whether this game's on NBC or Peacock or whatever, it's going to be a highly visible Week Zero game. And that's the same reason why the Big 12 is playing on Fridays now. You got to find your windows of opportunity to get in front of as many people as possible, and this is one. And what's interesting about this game is the other games so far have had one really big name and then an opponent. You know, for Nebraska, they lost to Northwestern, which was, you know, not good for Scott Frost. But last year was Notre Dame and Navy, which is a good rivalry. But, you know, I mean, Navy's not going to travel. We could send our Navy. That'd be kind of effective. And then you got K-State, Iowa State, and the future one in 27 is Wisconsin Pitt. The organizers are fired up about getting a rivalry game in their stadium.
I think it's cool. I think it's a unique opportunity every once in a while. These fan bases will deliver for them. Fitz, we're up against it here. Enjoy the dentist.
Yep.
You know, have a great time. Go powercat.com for all the latest on K-State. Let's do this again next week.
Sounds good, boys. Great to hear from you.
There goes Tim Fitzgerald. If you missed anything there, you can go back and listen to that for free at kfhradio.com. Those segments get put out there, podcasted form. Jad gets that ready for us. And there you go. We'll come back. More Sports Daily right after this.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily, this portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. It's big weekend, Tommy. We got Squishmallow Day coming up this weekend there. We got the kids all signed up. There's always stuff for the kids, and we don't always make it to all the events, but Squishmallows, we're making it to. My kids have a mountain of them in their beds. I can't wait to add a few more. But they're going to go make these things at Crestview this weekend. They're jacked up.
I'm still unsure exactly what that is. My boys are not old enough, I don't think, to be in that world yet. So I'm in the world of Blippi and Bluey and things like that. I'm not in the world of Squishmallow.
Yeah, I mean it's you know, Pogs. It's
Beanie Babies.
Okay. It's Pokemon. Gotcha. Like whatever it is, it's just that thing, you know. And they're big stuffed toys. My kids are going to make them. Crespi always has cool kid stuff. We always appreciate that about the club. It's what we use more than anything else, that pool. And they have golf, too. Lots of it. So we appreciate their support of this program. Give them a call. Check it out. Tell them we sent you over there here from Sports Daily. We're going to come back in hour number two. We'll give away a little HTO. We're going to talk about T. Higgins, what it could mean. Should the Chiefs be in the business of T. Higgins? We'll continue to look at that. The Royals. Ken out there, we're going to talk the Royals, don't worry. They win another one, trying to win the series today with an afternoon game that you'll hear, by the way, right here on KFH. Talk hour number two, Albrecht and Caster. Don't go away.
In Odyssey Sports Station, this is 97.5 and 1240 KFH, KNSS HD2 Clearwater, Wichita's most listened to sports radio. Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's hour number two here of Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you on this Thursday, on this draft day. Had a lot of fun there in the first hour. You can go back and listen to any of it on kfhradio.com. Tim Fitzgerald there joining us talking about the Dylan Edwards now potential return to K-State or maybe across the street to rival KU, to the Ireland trip, to his stirring of the pot on the new KU stadium. You can go back and listen to all of that at kfhradio.com. We always appreciate, by the way, mornings here at KFH, the staff, Prairie Fire Coffee, always available there in the break room. There's a huge tub of it, and everybody enjoys it. When I'm in there doing the Infinity Sports Network shifts, Tommy, I'm not kidding. I'll bet you I go through 10 refills of the cup. Now, that doesn't mean I drink 10 cups of coffee.
Good Lord.
So the beauty of it for me is in there, and that's why I always appreciate Prairie Fire doing this for us, is I need the hot. I drink, you know, I drink coffee here in the home studio every day because I need the heat for the voice. It's less so in a 2-hour show when I have a co-host, right? We get to give each other breaks plenty. But when it's 5 hours solo, whoo boy, do I need the heat. And the fastest and easiest way for me to get heat on the old, you know, windpipes is through that coffee there. Maybe, you know, and I have to be careful so that I don't drink like 10 cups of coffee, but it's there, and I appreciate that.
You might want to cover your ears, you know, knowing what you do for a living outside of this. Yeah, but one thing that Prairie Fire also does for us here in the studios is it's not only coffee, it's also iced tea. And I know, right?
What?
And so I'm here, you know, I'm obviously at the station basically every day throughout the entire day. And I can do coffee in the morning. I'm a morning coffee kind of guy, but then I got to switch to something else. And I drink a lot of that iced tea that Prairie Fire provides. So always appreciate their partnership with us.
Not so much a competitor. They obviously do bigger and larger things. Not so much retail like we are. But we do appreciate Prairie Fire there. And we, you know, appreciate everything. And you can get your hands on it for your office or whatever. Just look for it. We appreciate their support here at Odyssey, though. Tommy, let's talk about T. Higgins. So T. Higgins is an interesting concept for the Chiefs, one that I would be far more interested in, I think, had they not already invested in Hollywood Brown. He'd be a good fit anywhere. He's a really good player. Really good player. I don't think it would be I wouldn't do this if I were the Chiefs. I don't think they need to. I don't think it would be the smart place to spend their money. If they didn't have Rashee Rice, you know, I'm not considering his legal situation, but if they didn't have Rashee Rice, I would think about it. But I think they have a player that has the potential to be as impactful in an offense as T. Higgins is through Rashee Rice. So I wouldn't do this. I wouldn't even consider it if I were the Chiefs. It'll be too expensive. You can trade for him, but you're going to have to sign him to a big deal. Did you see the deal Amon Ross St. Brown just signed?
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
I don't know if T. Higgins is going to get that, but he's going to get close to it. And so, no, I would absolutely not be interested in this if I were the Chiefs. I would need to be far more desperate to be into this. The Jets, they probably ought to be into this if they could make it happen, right? They're desperate. They have like a one-year window. The Chiefs, I know they have this 1 year to win a third Super Bowl, but the Chiefs' window is still like 10 years open. I just don't think it's necessary to do something like that.
Is it likely that they make the trade? No, probably not. But I do think that it would be foolish to not at least kick the tires on it and see if there's a way to make that work. And I would imagine that's probably what has been going on. I would be, you know, I'd be surprised if Brett Veach is not, you know, at least figuring out if there was a possible way to make it work, because T. Higgins is such a phenomenal talent that, you know, I think that anybody would want to try to find a way to get him on your team. But again, I don't think it's likely. Honestly, I think you mentioned the Jets. Another team that I think would be great for him, and I can maybe see this playing out, would be the Patriots. I think the Patriots have quite a bit of capital to be able to go out and you know, not only trade for T. Higgins, but then sign him. They probably are going to draft a rookie quarterback, and then you could pair a new dynamic rookie quarterback with T. Higgins to be your premier wide receiver. So that's something else I think of that could be a possibility. Again, I don't think that it's likely. I don't even know what the betting odds are, you know, as far as who's most likely to end up with T. Higgins. I can't imagine the Chiefs are at the top of that. But I think that it should at least be worth a conversation, because here's the thing, and I mentioned this to you yesterday when this all came down. One thing that Brett Veach has always been good at is getting creative and trying to figure out ways to get things to work within the salary cap. I mean, he's restructured contracts multiple times. You know, he gets creative in how he wants to do that. So if they really want him and they feel like they can go out and they can get him, then Brett Veach will make the money work. I don't exactly know how he's going to do it, but he's been a wizard with that sort of thing, figuring out, you know, freeing up salary cap dollars.
They could do it, but at the cost of what? You know, like, what does that mean? Like, so if you go do that, what does that cost you, big picture? Does it cost you Trey Smith and Creed Humphrey? It's going to cost you somebody. And so if you do that, like, if you're asking me what is more important for this particular team, I would say both of those guys at minimum are more important. I would say Trent McDuffie is more important. I would say probably George Karlaftis is going to end up being more important. Whoever this left tackle that they end up with should be more important, although it won't be expensive for a while if they draft one. Is Rashi Rice more important, assuming he clears this legal situation at some point? Is he the guy you'd want to invest in? The one thing T. Higgins could do is help you offset the loss of Travis Kelce when the time comes, right? If Travis, and we don't know how much time Travis Kelce is going to play football. I think it's been overblown how close to retirement he is. I just don't get any indication he's anywhere near it as long as he's competing at a high level, and he's still the best tight end in football. So, you know, I don't know how you can even, unless he's being honest with them behind the scenes and saying, hey guys, for real, I've got like 1 year left, or I've got 2 years left. That would be one thing, but I doubt it. And I just don't know, you know, pop star wife or anything put to the side. Like, I don't know what would incline him to retire right now. His you know, celebrity status is not going away anytime soon, whether he's dating Taylor Swift or not. Like, he was already becoming a super celebrity. So that would be about the only thing that in any of this, by the way, and we talked about this, was it with you or with Paul? The potential of needing to replace Travis Kelce is the one thing about drafting a wide receiver that has my interest. But it would be the same thing for T. Higgins, right? But that's not right now. And right now, if Kelsey's not retiring like next year, paying T. Higgins the contract that it's going to take to get him, I mean, it's going to cost you somebody. And in the short term, that's offensive linemen and a young corner that I just don't want to lose. I'd much rather have those guys on this roster.
I get it. And I recognize all of that because you can't pay everybody. You can't keep everybody. There's no way to make that happen in the world of the salary cap. This isn't Major League Baseball where you can be the Dodgers and go out there and, you know, pay everybody everything. That's just not realistic in the NFL, in the way that it's all built. That being said, though, like I said, it's not likely, but don't you think that it is the responsibility, not just of Brett Veach, but, I mean, come on, every general manager probably in the NFL to at least kick the tires and, you know, at least think about it, to at least look at, you know, the possibility and what you can do to bring in a talent like T. Higgins. And maybe it's a very quick thought, you know, maybe it's, you know, something that's fleeting. You know, Brett Veach, you know, puts a couple of things on paper and tries to figure out, you know, some magic to make it work. And then is like, look, it's not going to be realistic for us. We're not going to do it. But I do think that it's the responsible thing for everybody to at least look at that. I mean, where would you put T. Higgins as far as, you know, maybe a top 10 wide receiver? Like, is he in the top 10? Is he in the top 5? Where does he rank as far as top receivers right now in the NFL?
Not top 5. Oh, man, that's a good question. So off the top of my head, without looking at a list and knowing that I'm absolutely going to forget about players, Justin Jefferson, his teammate Jamar Chase, Amon-Ra St. Brown just got a big deal. I think he's better. I'm trying to find. Let me pull up a quick list because I don't want to do him a disservice of where he would rank for me. So I would. So these are the receivers that I think I would rather have than T. Higgins at the moment. And we're talking short term here. CeeDee Lamb, Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jamar Chase, Chris Olave probably, AJ Brown with his injuries maybe not. I think now we're getting into the T. Higgins realm. Michael Pittman's right there with him. So top 10 is probably fair, I think-ish, right? That's about top 10. My problem with him is, and it's not his fault, is he's been with Jamar Chase the whole time. I do think there's a world, Tommy, where he goes and becomes the alpha and elevates himself into that category and that stratosphere. We haven't been able to see him do it, though, and he's going to have to get paid that way before. Like, is he really going to accept a trade somewhere and go prove it for a year? No, I think he's wanting to be traded so he can get his contract now. And right now, he hasn't had the opportunity, maybe, that some of these other guys have had, because he has had to share it to some degree with a really talented wide receiver room. I don't know. I mean, it you know, there's layers of risk involved with bringing him in. I think if you had it, like the Chargers, would make sense for them to go bring in T. Higgins, right? Like, that's a team that could make sense of that, I think. A team that, you know, at least at worst case scenario, you're bringing in a talented receiver when your quarterback position is established and you need a weapon for your quarterback. If I didn't have a quarterback, I would certainly not be interested in this. And, like, you know, like, let's say Carolina, right, for Bryce Young. Do you bring him in to help Bryce Young? I mean, maybe, but we still don't even know if Bryce Young's going to be very good. So I don't know that that even makes sense. It would have to be a place that has a good quarterback that, you know, softens the risk of paying a wide receiver that way. I think the Jets makes the most sense. I think the Jets would be a very... Oh, Garrett Wilson, I would take over T. Higgins, by the way. But adding him to the mix with the Jets...
Yeah, that makes you pretty explosive.
I'd have some interest in that.
You know, that may make everything, you the best.
Everything they're doing is a 1 year situation, yeah, anyway.
If the Jets bring in T. Higgins to pair alongside Garrett Wilson, I mean, at that point, I think that probably makes the Jets the best wide receiver room, at least in the conference, at least in the AFC. Because, I mean, I think before it's been the Bengals, right? I mean, you know, so yeah. I think you just move T. Higgins to the Jets, and then that becomes the best wide receiver room, I think, unless I'm forgetting.
I'd have to
one.
Think about that. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to even keep up with where everybody's moved. Once we get through the draft, I do that. Like, did you know? Because I almost just said, well, the Steelers, but I forgot. Did you know Deontay Johnson was?
Yeah,
he's with the Panthers now.
He's
so
out.
So I have to like get a settling of things on that. And look, I'm not sure who everybody even has right now. We'll get through the draft. We'll you know, once we get to camp and things, it'll really be, I mean, let's be real. It'll be once we start paying attention to fantasy football is when we're really going to dig into that. But yes, it would put them right there with anybody, and it would give Aaron Rodgers another weapon. But it's going to, like, that's the appropriate risk, don't you think, for a team like them who is in that situation to just come in and say, you know what, we're all in anyway. Why the hell not? Let's go get T. Higgins. Because nothing, you know, what else are you going to do? And when the dust settles and Aaron Rodgers is gone, whoever else it is that they bring in at least would be then, in theory, sitting there coming into a situation with, you know, Garrett Wilson and T. Higgins at minimum, which would be attractive for, you know, probably for them, a free agent quarterback. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me for the Chiefs. I think I would rather have any of the players it would potentially cost them to bring him in. Any one of them. Like, I don't know how far down the list I would have to go. And this isn't, again, this isn't a knock on T. Higgins. It's just about this specific situation with the Chiefs. If it caught.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Them, any one of Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, Karlaftis, McDuffie. I mean, I guess that's the list probably right now off the top of my head. Then I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't. There's no way. I would rather have any of those guys because I currently have Hollywood Brown, Rashee Rice, and Travis Kelce. That's plenty, right? And if Rashee Rice misses time, you've either got two at least high resource picks that you hope continue to develop. And I know that's a fool's game, but it's a different sort of pressure on Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney this year. Like, they have no expectations this year, anything they give you now. Whereas last year, we needed something from those two guys, right? Like, one of them, and they didn't. This year, you don't really need anything from either of them. Anything they give you is a bonus because you're counting on those other three guys so heavily. I still do think they need to bring somebody in. I would honestly, like, you know how badly I want them to take and solve left tackle in this draft. I would much rather see them draft a receiver than go spend the money it would take to get T. Higgins. I'll tell you that, no question.
Are you out on any of the remaining free agent wide receivers that are out there right now? I mean, I know we need to get through the draft tonight first, but
I like a lot of them.
You know, do you think that there still is a potential that Kansas City could try to bring in another veteran wide receiver?
Yes.
You know, I'm looking at
if I'm trying to predict the draft, I'm predicting they move up, they take left tackle, and they sign one of these wide receivers. Okay. I mean, that's it for me.
Yeah.
That's what I think they're going to do. I mean, now, again...
I'm sure they'll take a wide receiver at some point in the draft, though. I mean, maybe not in the first round if they go left tackle, but I think that there's probably maybe a third or fourth round pick or something they could take on a wide receiver. I mean, here's who is still available as a free agent wide receiver. Hunter Renfrow, Allen Robinson, Odell Beckham Jr., Michael Gallup. I like Michael Gallup a lot. If that was... I would potentially jump on board with that if they can get him.
I like that player. I think he's too similar to what they'll ask Hollywood Brown to do, though.
Tyler Boyd is available. Michael Thomas is still available. Obviously, they released MVS, so he's not coming back there. Russell Gage, DJ Chark, Jamal Agnew. Of course, Mecole Hardman is on the list. He's actually the youngest so far of all the names I've just listed. Mecole Hardman is still the youngest on that list. And then it goes down from there with like Randall Cobb and Chase Claypool and Sterling Shepard and Richie James. So that, I mean, there are a handful of names.
I'll give you the names here again. Perfect scenario for tonight and through this draft. They take their favorite left tackle. You know, I don't think that person's falling to 32, so it probably requires a trade up. You do that, you get left tackle. You know, you take another offensive lineman in the draft. You make sure you come away with a corner or two. And then in free agency, you go get one of these names. Renfrow, Hunter Renfrow, Allen Robinson, DJ Chark, Sterling Shepard. We'll get one of those guys for nothing to back up Rashee Rice and you know, play it safe there. And at some point, you can draft another wide receiver later in the draft. I don't really care at that point. That's how I hope this goes for them. That's how I think it should go for them. And a big reason why I don't think they need to take the round one wide receiver, because I think their room is good enough without it. But I know that some of these players have risk involved, like Sterling Shepard. Yeah, he's been hurt a lot. That dude is a really good football player. You're not asking much. You're asking him to be available in the games that Rashee Rice isn't available pretty much, right? Okay. Yeah, let's do that.
He's also going to be 32. He's also going to be 32 years old.
That's fine, because you're going to sign him to a one-year deal anyway. It doesn't matter, right? These guys are coming in. I mean, Hunter Renfrow, same thing. Hunter Renfrow would be a little different. Hunter Renfrow could probably help them with or without Rashee Rice.
And Hunter Renfrow would be potentially a player that, you know, I don't know if the Chiefs would do this, but I wouldn't have a problem with them signing him to more than a one-year deal. You know, if it's a two.
I wouldn't sign any of these guys. I wouldn't sign any of these guys to more than two. I would like to get whoever they bring in, if I'm the Chiefs, I'd like to do it on a one-year deal. Like, come here, reset your market value with Patrick Mahomes in this offense, and then go make a bunch of money next year. That's a pretty attractive offer for just about all of these players, right? Or it's somebody like Allen Robinson, who has been so snake-bitten by quarterback play that it's like, you know what, dude? You were once one of the most talented guys in this league. Come have some fun with a guy like Patrick Mahomes. No more Blake Bortles. No more Mitch Trubisky. Like, come play with Patrick Mahomes. No offense, Blake Bortles or Mitch Trubisky. But, I mean, you know what I'm saying. Like, that's what I would do if I were the Chiefs. There is a lot of smoke around the wide receiver thing. I can't figure out why, unless they're really concerned about the Rashee Rice situation, there would need to be. Hollywood Brown, Rashee Rice, Travis Kelce, Kadarius Toney, Sky Moore, I know, but as your fourth and fifth options, like, that ain't bad. And that's not the only guys they have on the roster either, but that's going to be good enough. I just get your left tackle solved. Go get another corner. I don't know. Of draft priorities for me, it'd be third on the list. I'd rather see an offensive lineman. I'd rather see another corner. But nobody gets upset by an early wide receiver. They're exciting. I get it. Like, we're all going to love it if they do it and say, oh, man, this guy, look how good he is.
So the most recent mock draft, and I know there are tons of them out there, but the most recent ESPN mock draft, now has the Chiefs going wide receiver in the first round, Xavier Leggett, South Carolina. That's their final, like the final ESPN mock draft from today is Xavier Leggett, wide receiver, South Carolina in the first round.
Who's the, there's a left tackle from Oklahoma, is it Guyton? Mm-hmm. I have seen them mocked to a couple of times, and that's at just picking at 32. Again, if they, like, I think the best thing that could happen to them is the guy that they like at left tackle falls to 32. That I'd be, if they end up taking a tackle at 32, I would guess that means, Tommy, that they liked that left tackle and evaluated him highly. Because I do think if they like one over the other, they're in a really good position to go get him. So if they take one at 32, it probably would tell us they actually like that player as much or more than some of these others. That would be probably the best case scenario, I think. But, you know, the chances of that are low. Offensive linemen, you know, grades feel pretty consistent and moderately safe. I don't, maybe not, actually. I can think of some left tackles that have failed, for sure. We'll come back. We'll talk a little baseball. Royals trying to make it 3 out of 4 against the Jays in some afternoon baseball. Sigh of relief, what we're seeing in this series? I think it might be. We'll come back. We'll talk about it next. All right, coming in here, let's give away a little HTO Jad on that IHOP hotline, 869-1240. We'll give you a free iced tea, more than 25 flavors, including the all-new Strawberry Passion. It's good. These cards you'll get are good for Derby or either Wichita location, east or west. You'll also get some free ring coffee on us here at Sports Daily. So first caller right now to the IHOP hotline for some free HTO. Good luck, everybody. Jad will get us a winner there. We appreciate everybody tuning in, listening in, watching, however it is you take in the show, Sports Daily. We appreciate that as we grow and you know, do new and cool things. We always appreciate everybody hanging with us here. Been talking a lot about the NFL draft, obviously, round one tonight. We've been excited about it for a long time. It's also Major League Baseball season. The Royals trying to take 3 out of 4 against Toronto. That game, first pitch at 1:10, and you'll hear it here on KFH this afternoon. This is a big, you know, big chance, big opportunity for the Royals. Tommy, I think things are settling in just a little bit here after, you know, after a rough stretch there. I still want to really focus in on these next couple of weeks. But Alec Marsh has been the Royals' most steady starter, and they've had good pitching, but boy, what a revelation he's been. And then he gets hit by a line drive in the fifth inning yesterday, has to leave the game. X-rays, according to Aaron Rodgers after the game, were negative. It's a nasty bruise. The imprints there from the seams of the ball are on it. Says he plans on bouncing back and being okay. I don't know, Tommy, if you've ever been hit by a ball that way. I have, in the face, actually, where I could, like, see the seam. It hit me right in the eye. Whoa. I could see seam marks on there. But it went away. There was no damage done. So I know that kind of bruise because I've had it. So hopefully, if the X-rays are negative there, I mean, maybe you got to miss one time if the bruising is really sore. But I think sigh of relief, sort of like with Salvador Perez, in a season where injuries have just decimated Major League Baseball, the Royals have been pretty fortunate. They may have dodged a big bullet last night because Alec Marsh has been the guy. Like, he has been their best reliever, Tommy. I mean, he's been their most consistent, we'll say, starter. What are we now, 5 times through the rotation?
Yeah, and I think that dodging a bullet is absolutely correct as far as, you know, avoiding what looks to be serious injury for Alec Marsh. What I think has been remarkable for Kansas City overall from the start of the season to now, the number of games, even early in the season, that they've won with not getting a lot of offense. You know, they've won 5 games so far this season, 5 of their 15. It's a third of their wins when the Royals' offense have scored 3 or fewer runs. They've won 5 of those games. And so that tells you that pitching has been really good. You know, starting pitching has been really good for the most part overall. I think that looking back at the last couple of games, the bullpen has started to come along. James MacArthur looks like he might be the real deal for them closing games. And so I think that you mentioned, I think you said the words, the Royals are settling in. And I think that that probably, you know, has something to do with it. And they needed over the last couple of days some kind of slump buster. And they got it. You know, Bobby Witt Jr. played great last night. That's what he's there for. He's there to, you know, get the team out of funks. And he was able to make that happen last night. And so another good win. They've got this chance to take the series. And we've talked about over the last several days is how important this stretch of baseball is for Kansas City. If they can take 3 of 4 from Toronto after losing the opening game and then, you know, losing against the Orioles in a couple of the games last weekend, that's going to be really essential.
I think you bring up an interesting point with Bobby Witt Jr., and I agree with you. One of the big, I think, evolutions in his game, you know, late last year and into this year has been what you said there. Like, really shouldering the load single-handedly. You know, and I know it's not single-handedly, and you can't really do that in baseball. But that part of the evolution of his stardom is taking shape, where he is, you know, he just feels like he's going to fix it. Like, whatever it is, he'll fix it, whether it's incredible defensive plays, whether it's stealing bases, all of it. He's doing that now. Like, he is taking that next step. And that's big for, you know, for a team that's not going to have the depth, and the Royals aren't going to have the depth in the lineup that a lot of their peers are going to have. That's pretty important. And then the bullpen. Quatraro. Man, I don't know how much heat he got last year. I gave him some because the team wasn't getting better, but it wasn't really about him as much as it was about how do you stick with something when it was bad and got worse. But I think he deserves a ton of credit this year. It's not easy sometimes for managers to shake up what they've laid out in their planning early in a season, but he has totally reshaped the way he's thought about his bullpen, and it's working. He's pushing the right buttons. And I think, you know, the pitchers deserve the most credit for that. But getting these guys and being able to abandon the preseason plan quickly, I think he does deserve credit for that.
Yeah.
And this bullpen could be, you know, like we keep saying, like, it just needs to be not the worst in baseball. What if it does become an asset? You know, like, what if they're able to add to it at the deadline, maybe, or maybe they just have enough and it becomes an asset now?
I think that that's, I think that that's a realistic possibility.
Pretty big dang deal.
It's a realistic possibility. And, you know, I know that you look at the final stat lines from last night and Zerpa didn't have a great outing, but in his defense, he didn't know he was going out there to pitch until Alec Marsh had to leave the game, you know?
Right.
So that wasn't
right.
part of the Royals' plan. But in the last two nights, in both of these wins against Toronto, it's been Schreiber, it's been Stratton, it's been MacArthur. And I think that it's, to your point, really tempting for managers when you've got bigger name relievers, regardless of how dominant people think they are, they're names that people recognize, and when they're acquired in the offseason to bolster a bullpen like Will Smith and Nick Anderson, they're names that have been around for a while, people know them, it's really tempting to just continue to want to lean on them in high leverage situations. And when it's not working, just continue to go back to it and go back to it again. And they're going to work their way through it, and they're going to keep it. But then in the process, the team's losing games and they're blowing saves and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It takes a lot of guts, I think, to be able to say, look, this is not working. It's early on. We've got a great season going so far. We want to keep it going. So we need to be flexible and open to making changes and moving away from maybe the players that, you know, people know to the players that are actually going to be the most effective. And in this case, it's the bullpen, and it's guys like MacArthur, and it's guys like Schreiber, and it's been Stratton lately.
And these are guys with experience in some ways. I don't want to overthink the bullpen. Right. They're hot right now, too. It's going to take a long time for us, just like the rotation. I mean, we want to love the rotation. It's been hot out of the gates. It's coming back to earth a little bit. The bullpen is hot right now. Like, what is the happy medium between what we saw out of the bullpen early and what we're seeing now? I think I'm pretty optimistic that it could be good. Right. Bullpens are really weird. I feel better in this series. I do. I still want to see these next 2 weeks. And it's so great to see, It's so great to see Bobby Witt Jr. and his continued evolution, and to give the Royals this banner carrier for the organization, knowing that they signed him long term. You've got the face of your franchise, you know, and Salvador Perez has worn that hat well, very well, in fact, and he's going nowhere. But you've got a star in Bobby Witt Jr., and he's playing like a star, and he's picking them up in every way that he possibly can. And he does it in all the different phases of the game, and that's awesome. So today, you've got Cole Reagans. Cole Reagans needs a bounce-back game in a real bad way. Cole Reagans, you know, a lot rides on him for the future of this franchise, but for this season, too. And his, well, his last outing was absolutely dreadful. But two out of his last three haven't been great. You remember, like, he pitched well against the Mets in the game that they lost. But against the Astros, he gave up 10 hits. 10 hits in that game against the Astros in five innings. So he needs to start missing some bats here again. And just totally erase the Baltimore game, because the Baltimore game was an absolute disaster, one of his worst ever. And you got a chance here today to come back, to get back on track and do that. They're going up against, who's pitching for the Jays? Oh, well, Berríos, one of the best in the game, certainly the best, you know, one of the best this season. He has been lights out this season. He has given up, he hadn't given up a run, an earned run in his last three starts. So you're looking at almost 20 innings here it's been since he's given up a run. And in those 20 innings, he's only given up 11 hits. So, you know, he is as good right now as there is in baseball. And he is killing it. That's who the Royals go up against today. But they've got their ace on the mound, or at least who they think is their ace, in Cole Reagans. So that's kind of what you want, right? Like, you're at least going to split the series. You can sort of let it all hang out today if you're the Royals. Go after Berríos. Get after it. Know that probably you're going to need good innings out of your bullpen. If, you know, if Reagans pitches well and Berríos pitches well, it may get into a bullpen game. And, you know, at the end of the game, we'll see what happens. But catch lightning in a bottle a little bit. But again, when you're going up against a guy who hadn't allowed a run in the last three outings over 20 innings, good luck. We'll see what the Royals can do. That game gets underway. The coverage of it begins at 1 o'clock right here on KFH. So be sure to listen in. We'll be back tomorrow to react to it and look back at that series just a little bit. Hey, you know, congratulations to Mark. Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
What I found interesting about the Royals over the last couple of days is that it wasn't 2 weeks ago that you guys started talking trade deadline and started talking about how important getting the bullpen better was going to be, and the bullpen started to look better almost immediately after you guys talked about that.
Well, right out of the gates, it was all about get Will Smith out of the closer's role. That's not what he's going to do. If he's going to be able to help, it won't be as that. And I understand, like, why they maybe wanted to try doing that early, but no, that was never going to be it for this team. Then, Jad, it's interesting because they reshuffled and it's working. I still do think, though, you can never have enough in the bullpen.
Well, that's something that you said before, too, is that that's something every team wants all the time.
But,
yeah.
But I will say, though, like, if you're solid at the back end, it's much less expensive to go get, you know, like a handy reliever versus somebody you need to send out there in the, you know, the eighth or the ninth inning. And if they don't need that, they won't have to spend as much. I think there's a moderate chance there by the time if this settling of things in the bullpen continues at the clip, and it's far too early to know if it will, there's a pretty good chance they'd have a bigger need for a bat in the lineup than they would that. The hope is you don't need anything in the rotation, right? Because right now, with what we've seen, there's nobody in the rotation you'd want to push out necessarily of the rotation. Now, injuries have crushed across baseball this year, so that can always change. But boy, if you don't have to go after starting pitching, and maybe you don't have to go in and after back into the bullpen, now they become better players for bats. And the thing about trading for bats, I think, for Kansas City, is they could probably target guys you could use a little longer, right? Like, maybe there's a, you know, not the, you know, you're not going after Juan Soto, but maybe there's a guy with 2-3 years left on his contract or has some arbitration years that fits into your budget long term. Maybe they could identify that type of thing instead of a rental. The possibilities open up if their bullpen's good, because it'll take the urgency off having to do everything you can to solve a bullpen. But it's been good lately, and they got a big challenge today with Berríos trying to take 3 out of 4 against Toronto. We'll come back. More Sports Daily. Congratulations to Mark for winning the HTO, free iced tea, free coffee. We appreciate you listening, Mark, and everybody listening. You'll have another opportunity tomorrow. Stick around. More Sports Daily coming right up. All right, welcome back, everybody. It's almost time, that NFL draft. Tommy, I'm seeing Marvin Harrison Jr. talk a little bit about skipping the combine. I always think it's interesting when people get so concerned about players skipping the combine, the high-profile players. What does Marvin Harrison need to prove at the combine?
Right? Nothing. I've got no issue with him skipping.
I don't think he's trying to hide anything. So he was asked about it, and he said it was pretty much based on a conversation with his dad and, you know, a Hall of Fame wide receiver. And most of it was just about, like, preparing his body for an NFL season. And, you know, and he's had a couple injuries in college. Like, did you watch that quarterback documentary and see what Kirk Cousins has to go through on a weekly basis to get – so – If your Hall of Fame dad is giving you the advice of, man, you just need to focus on getting your body right now. Now is not the time that you need to worry about the fastest 40 time you can run. And for a guy like him, NFL, they don't need the combine to see him play football. Turn on the tape, man. Like, I get it, for a lot of players, it's a chance to show off some of the physical traits maybe that weren't allowed to be shown. But Marvin Harrison doesn't have anything to prove. We saw enough of him in college. So if he is getting the advice of a Hall of Famer to, you know what, chill and get your body right, you chill and get your body right. The other thing I thought that was really interesting, out of wherever this interview was, I'm pulling it from CBS Sports. I think just a conversation with NFL media close to the draft. But he said that his dad told, you know, you got to be yourself in these interviews, because it basically, like, just act like who you want to act like for these teams, because you need to know and they need to know how they're going to react to that. I thought that was interesting advice, too. We're seeing a lot of Tommy, Bobby Witt Jr., Jackson Holliday, Marvin Harrison Jr. There are a lot of Patrick Surtain. There are a lot of really good second-generation players, and it makes me feel like not only do you win the genetic lottery, but you have this other lottery that you get access to of the best advice you could possibly get on how to succeed at that level. Just not fair for the rest of us.
Did you mention Patrick Mahomes? I mean, he's there too. Fernando
Different
Tatis
sport, but
is
yes.
there.
Yeah,
you know, there are quite a few that are.
I don't know how much. The reason I didn't say Mahomes, by the way, I don't know how much Pat Mahomes Senior telling Patrick Mahomes about being a football player. But yeah, exactly. Second generation athletes that follow their parents in these sports, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Like, you know, the star players whose parents were athletes doing literally the same thing. It's not fair for the rest of us. Look at us, you know? Like,
yeah,
we never had a chance.
Jad just made a great point. Shador Sanders is right there too, you know, and if Shiloh Sanders and like, I mean, yeah, like that's all there too.
How about this for a prediction? And maybe I've already made this prediction because I've been thinking it for a long time. I think maybe I have, but you know, 1 year-ish before next year's NFL draft, Shador Sanders is going to be the number one overall pick next year. He's going to be the number one overall pick. I think he's good. I think he's going to be the best quarterback, and usually the best quarterback gets taken number one overall. I think it's going to be Shador Sanders next year. But yeah, his dad, and his dad's very public about the advice that he gives him, you know, going as far to say, yeah, we aren't going to play for any of these teams. We'll see. I don't know. Dylan Edwards' transfer brings up – how do you think this is going to go for Prime in year two in the Big 12?
Well, I think that one way or another, because he's such a, you know, media lightning rod, that it's either going to be the best thing in the world or the worst thing in the world. There's really no in-between for Prime. And so with the news of just kind of this mass exodus out of Colorado, you know, I think it could very well not end up going well this year for Colorado. I don't know that, but regardless, that's going to get a ton of attention. Like, I'm just already preparing myself for the onslaught, you know, of and Colorado could very easily be, you know, the team that gets the most media exposure.
Oh,
despite the fact that they could be 3-9, you know what I mean? Yep. Like that sort of thing.
No, they will, and that's
happen.
A good thing. It's a good thing for the Big 12, by the way. I like that that's the case. Their non-con schedule features Nebraska, North Dakota State, and Colorado State. Knowing that, Tommy, and Vegas odds are and win totals are not out yet, I'll say 4.5 wins for Colorado, over-under. Which way are you going?
I'm going to go the under, I think, as of now. If I knew that there was, you know, not the exodus of players out of the program, I'd probably go higher than that.
Don't forget they're bringing in a lot of players, too, though.
I mean, I don't know.
They brought in like 50 dudes.
For now, cautiously, I'm going to say I'll take the under.
So I'll call North Dakota State and Colorado State wins. Nebraska's a wash. Baylor, I'll call a win at home. Geez, Cincinnati at home, maybe. That might be it. We're getting close. It's going to be fun. They'll be the most interesting team again. We'll follow them, of course, because now they're in the Big 12, and we love that. 869-1240. We'll come back. We'll tell you what's on the network. Get you prepared next.
Before the puck drops, BetMGM is...